Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about Cuba, and I am privileged to have back on the program my colleague from World Beyond War, John Ruhr, who is treasurer and a member of the board at World Beyond War. He's a retired emergency physician whose practice convinced him of a crying need for alternatives to violence for resolving tough conflicts, which led him to the informal study of teaching of nonviolence for the past 35 years, with peace team field experience in Haiti, Colombia, Central America, Palestine, and Israel, and several U.S. cities. He's worked in South Sudan with the Nonviolent Peace Force. He also serves on the committee to abolish nuclear weapons with Physicians for Social Responsibility, educating the public and politicians about that threat. And he has been a facilitator on various online courses of World Beyond Wars, including War Abolition and Leaving World War II Behind. John Ruhr, thanks for all you're doing, and welcome to Talk World Radio.
Yeah, good to be here with you, David.
So what is happening now with Cuba in general terms? Things have been getting worse and worse, I think.
Well, you know, I've never been to Cuba, and I'm going to go there very soon. And I have only followed it peripherally as a beautiful Caribbean nation that had a communist revolution that, for everything I read, seemed to improve the conditions for people in Cuba back in 1959. And the United States has seemed to resent that ever since for reasons that aren't super clear to me. And I finally getting a chance to visit and see for myself. The immediate reason to go is a new round of sanctions. That is, after the U.S. withdrew its massive naval armada that allowed them to kidnap the president of Venezuela and kill a few hundred people there, instead of focusing on Cuba, got distracted in the Middle East with another terrible war in Iran, which gave the Cubans a little bit of respite. But just 2 weeks ago, Trump said, Cuba's next. I'm going to send Marco, I assume meaning Rubio, to be the guy that can finally take out the communist government. So what has happened there, as I understand it, is the sanctions, that is the inability of Cubans to participate like other decent human beings around the world in the financial system and the trade system, has gotten severely worse, with almost a total blockade of fuel going to the country. Tankers have been turned away, and Trump has managed to put enough pressure on countries that I thought would be able to get through, like China and Russia and Venezuela, to deliver oil, and promised to punish any countries with severe tariffs and so forth if they help the Cuban people in any way. So I want to meet the Cuban people, see what those blockade and sanctions look like, and let them know that it's not the American people, but the government that is causing their trouble.
Yeah, it seems like a double disaster. Trump goes from Venezuela to Iran to Cuba, creating catastrophes, and nobody stops him. And he says, this one's next. Plus, other countries are afraid of the wrath of Trump to help Cuba, that have helped Cuba for 50 years. What are you going to do? Who are you going to do it with? How are you going to get there, et cetera?
Well, the idea for this actually came among some of us who had been participating in the flotilla into Gaza, you know, an effort that's been around for almost 20 years now, when other countries would not help people under total blockade and attack. People have tried to get ships in and occasionally succeeded in bringing aid to Gaza. We thought, well, now this might be even more doable in Cuba because they don't have the incredible history of being attacked by another country, in the Gaza's case, Israel, and it's closer to home, and perhaps a flotilla would help. But the flotilla is a lot more complicated than just flying there or getting there other ways. And so there's an international group of people going to stand in solidarity with the Cuban people in March here. In particular from the United States, Code Pink and Global Partners for Health is sending, we're taking an airplane filled with 6,000 pounds of medical supplies into Cuba with about 130 people, planning to meet with grassroots groups and other solidarity groups from around the world to stand with the Cuban people for this brief period of time.
That's wonderful that you're able to bring some aid, but the sanctions are pretty tough, right? And this is what, 60 years or so of sanctions that have done absolutely nothing toward the purported goal of the sanctions, as in North Korea, as for, I don't know, 50 years or so in Iran as well. Like, what is the actual purpose of these sanctions other than illegally and cruelly harming people? Because they've never ever done what they're supposed to do, have they?
Well, I'm certainly not going to disagree with you on that, David. The only thing that's different now, perhaps among Americans, and there's some hope in this, is that if you had said that even 5 years ago or 10 years ago to most Americans, they'd shrug their shoulders, what business of it is mine? It looks to me like the point is cruelty. And for the first time, Americans in the last year have experienced ICE agents in their neighborhood and attacking their neighborhoods and kidnapping people off the street. And they're starting to realize that sometimes governments do things just to be cruel, which I think is one way of testing their own power and what they can get away with before people will stop them.
I'm of two minds with these ICE protests, as you know, because they sort of invert the proper proportionality. Like the places where the US government is killing the most people, we protest the least. And where they've only killed a relatively tiny number of people, we protest the most because it's closer to us. But I'm also encouraged because maybe people make those connections between the places and because in many cases, they're protesting on behalf of immigrants and saying, we're not going to exclude those people. We're going to stand in between you and those people. What do you think? Is it a step toward opposing the whole war machine, or is it, a distraction?
No, I think it's a step toward, and I'll tell you, I just had one of the most hopeful weeks I've had for a while. Three weeks ago when we attacked Iran, I, like a lot of people, went into depression over how lousy a job we as peacemakers do in preventing wars, only comforted by the occasional comment I get, well, think of how much worse it would be if you weren't doing this. But I could give it a lot more hope this last week. And in particular, just got off a webinar that Nonviolence International hosted activists from Minnesota and activists from Palestine. And it was led, actually, the speakers were three middle-aged mothers, all of them who had done amazing things in their community, followed the principles of unarmed civilian protection, both that have been well known and new creative things all of them had done. And the two women from Minnesota, who were amazing in their own right, gave full acknowledgement to the woman in Palestine about there is no comparison. We realize that. We get upset when two people are killed. You've had thousands upon thousands of people killed, and you're under much worse restrictions. And we don't want to belittle that at all. And the comfort that gave to the Palestinians, and they realize the struggle is still the same. But there was no doubt, they said, your struggle is our struggle. And so the best leaders of civilian protection in this country fully recognize that. And I think there's a lot of hope there.
I think there is. I think that's very encouraging. There may be some means of scrounging out little, scraping up some tidbits of hope if you're in the, the hopium addiction that there's been this push for a war on Iran since, I mean, since 1979, when kids in my elementary school were dancing on stage and singing Bomb Around to the tune of the Beach Boys, Barbara Ann, and ever since, but several times they've come within inches and we've stopped it. And there have been public protests. There's been even movement in the US government and the so-called intelligence agencies against it. And it's been stopped several times. But why now? Why did they succeed now in finally getting this war started?
Well, watching things closely in the Middle East and having been to Palestine not long ago, it's clear that what was preventing Israel from fully attacking was having some equivocation on the part of prior presidents about giving 100% support to full out genocide as opposed to the ethnic cleansing we've been doing for and supporting for 70 years. But they successfully militarily really weakened the groups that were standing up for the dominance of Israel, Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza, the Houthis, have all been significantly weakened. And I think that encouraged Israel to think we only have one guy left between us and the total domination of the Middle East that Huckabee agreed they should have in a recent interview. And now, with full unequivocal support of a president who I think there's probably good evidence that Israel has something on him in terms of the Epstein files and so forth. I don't know, but I'd love to see that in the court so that people can really tell for sure whether or not. But I think those two things combined, weakening the proxies and having full support of the US, how many aircraft carriers do we now have surrounding this little country of Iran whose military budget is 1/100th of ours?
Well, some of them come from Norfolk here in Virginia, that the Eisenhower for, that went to Venezuela and got shot at down there and then went over to Persian Gulf to get shot at by Iran. What drives me crazy is, the failures of the US government and then we in the United States, but also the entire world, because it's, I think, about 30 years that every year the UN General Assembly passes a resolution with almost every vote, sometimes all but one vote or two votes, saying end these illegal sanctions on Cuba, end this blockade. There's no defense for it. And then doesn't do anything else. Doesn't lift another finger, leaves it to people like you to privately go and get some boats and some planes and try to bring in some aid to save some lives. Where's the so-called rules-based order? Where's the world?
Well, let me add that as a third piece to why Israel and why now. And that is with that Security Council resolution in November, was it 23, 24? I don't remember the exact number. Basically, giving Trump the authority to establish a board of peace outside of the UN, of which he's president for life and can determine which international forces are going to stabilize Gaza. And I think that was the third piece that everybody finally said, okay, before. Or maybe the UN would intervene in something. And I think they gave them carte blanche that no, we're not going to stand up for to this at all. And a lot of the countries I understand, the US just has so much pressure and influence. I'm not sure I understand China. Like, you sort of understand Russia. It looks to me like Trump met with Putin and said, we'll leave you alone in Ukraine. In fact, we'll even take some sanctions off of you so you can sell more oil and buy more weapons to bomb Ukraine. If you'll leave us alone in Iran, right on your border, we're going to take another country and destroy it. And the Russians not saying anything but abstaining. And so I think that's the end of international law, as World Beyond War and you and I have had hoped would be a major weapon in the fight against against the law of the jungle. It's still there. The laws are there, but it's only people that are going to enforce them. No governments are going to enforce them. And so we have our work cut out for us.
I know some of our friends and allies have proposed that some of the Gulf kingdoms and dictatorships have been resisting this war in some way. It's a little hard for me to see, given they haven't joined in, but they've allowed the United States to have military bases in their countries. And as far as I know, it's using them as it's using bases all around the world for this. But Spain seems to have effectively said no, and Azerbaijan maybe has effectively said no. And the prime minister of Spain has been very outspoken. Is there anything there to encourage or build on at all?
Well, yeah, what these governments do, I don't have as much faith in because they can change day to day, as building a people-powered movement where people say no to this kind of stuff. As we know, the dock workers in Italy stopped shipments of weapons to Israel, and yet the Italian government, as far as I know, hasn't said, or maybe lately they have, that we won't support, allow refueling and bases to be used for the attack on Iran.
I haven't heard them saying that.
No, and that's why I think really the world is at such a crossroads. I mean, never have people come forth in my lifetime with saying violence is the answer to everything, that empathy is a bad thing, and that power is all that matters, and the biggest guys get to win, and stop talking to us about law. What we want is dominance. I mean, that's the way I guess dictators and conquerors all through history did. But In our parents' lifetime, after World War II, there was so much slaughter and misery and the dawn of nuclear weapons that we said, wait, maybe we ought to try to prevent this in the future. And that all seems to be being shredded now. But I think that maybe now people will take up the gauntlet and stop their governments from doing this a little bit at a time. I know it doesn't look terribly hopeful right now, but I'm seeing signs that I had never seen before. For example, I just read that this is the first war in US history that, after it started, still does not have the support of the majority of the population. I remember so well the first Gulf War. 80% of Americans did not want to go to war in the Gulf. The day after we attacked, 60% did.
Yeah.
But this is the first war that doesn't even have that much support. And then Trump is doing a great job of alienating allies all over the world. And maybe people are going to realize these governments are really goofy and we better take them back.
It's very, very encouraging, as you say, to have polls where people don't jump on in support of the thing, and where you have at least one of the two political parties that are allowed at least pretending to be against the thing. But it's not crystal clear that it's more than pretending, and it's not crystal clear how we move them to do more than pretending. You spend as much time as anybody going after the US government in Washington, D.C. Are you seeing any signs of serious movement there?
I know they could be moved because what they're interested is in votes. And if you can convince people, and there are a lot of good-hearted people in Congress who said, I can't do this job if I don't win the election. And the election is almost always bought off because of Citizens United and money running everything. There are rare exceptions, but not enough to make a difference. And if we could get a people-powered movement in the US that to overturn Citizens United and have perhaps publicly funded elections where people have to run on merit rather than running on who their donors are, I think we could make progress. And I've seen some of this firsthand. One senator in particular, when they came in, said, I ran on a platform of standing Israel. I will always stand with Israel. And lately, in light of actual evidence in her humanity, they're realizing that no, other things matter too, and has voted against the wars and against some of the bombings and so forth. So that's a big change, and it's because we persisted and persisted. One thing about the American people that I think it needs to change is the concept of democracy. It seems like we're all trained to believe that democracy is a vote every 4 years or every 6 years for a senator. And I asked people at a really anti-war, I said, well, for example, I was talking to a relative and I said, does saying how terrible my senator is, he's voting the wrong way. And I said, does he know you don't want this war? He said, what do you mean? I said, have you written him? If I run into the halls, which I might do here, and mention your name, will he know that you're against this war? Oh, he's hopeless, is what he said. So, and I hear this over and over again. So part of it is us learning to that democracy means actually holding your representative accountable after you vote for them. And that's much more important than who you actually vote for, I think, or at least it's equally important.
John Roer, I just saw a video of Senator Van Hollen, I think maybe from where you live, who was not only upbraiding the Prime Minister of Canada for backing a war after his speech opposing Trump's antics, but mentioned the existence of international law, which I thought was maybe the big news in his comments. Typically, it said that this is all we get from the so-called leaders of the Democrats, Schumer and Jeffries and so forth. This, well, we need proper planning, we need proper authorization, we need it's never is it a crime that you couldn't possibly justify, authorize, make moral or anything else with, no matter what planning and brilliant authorizing you did. That struck me to have a U.S. senator actually mention the existence of international law and that this thing is a crime, no matter what they do. And God knows he didn't mention doing anything. That struck me as a teeny bit of progress.
There is. I'm really, really proud. Senator Van Hollen is one of the best in Senate, and I'll tell you something else. He was heavily involved in that. It gives me a tremendous amount of hope. So, if anybody listened to the announcement from the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists about the doomsday clock being closer to Armageddon than ever, they're done by real scientific wizards, the Board of Science that decides the risk assessment. And so, often those speeches are a little on the dry side. But I'd encourage anybody to go back and look at the ones this year, particularly Maria Ressa, I think is her name, who won the Nobel Prize for Journalism. She has an 8-minute speech that everybody needs to listen to. She said, the Philippines 5 years ago was where the US is today. We had a dictator who was just taking people off the street, accusing them of being a drug dealer and shooting them in cold blood and was getting away with that. And I did my journalism against that, and he swore he'd have me in prison over that and tried hard to put me in prison. He said, She said, today I'm here talking to you and he's in prison. She said, and that did not come about from government. That was a people-powered movement that stopped him and brought some justice. He says, we're not out of hell. We're in purgatory. She said, it's still bad there, but it showed what's possible. Now, I'll give my personal example of the same thing. So Van Hollen was a senator who, when one of my neighbors 3 miles up the street, Kilmer Abrega Garcia, was abducted by mistake, the government said, sent off to the prison in El Salvador where Noam Christie showed off her figure in front of the men in cages being tortured, smiling. I heard her in a room with Van Hollen and other senators, them calling her out for not following the rule of law. She said, we know he's guilty and he's never coming back. And I sat in that room and he listened to a couple of good senators. Well, some set of senators said, oh, you're doing a wonderful job. Thank you for your service to Mr. Trump and everybody else. But a few of them said, you're not a prosecutor. That's a prosecutor's job to say whether somebody's guilty. That's not your job as a police officer. Well, anyway, she stood her ground. She now is fired and Kilmer is free. He's still facing some charges, but he's free. So just like Reza in Philippines, we've got hope here if enough people do their job and care.
There are victories. There are just so many victories we need. But John, when you're in Cuba, what's going to happen? What are we going to hear about? What do you hope is going to be accomplished that's going to move us toward finally some sort of victory on Cuba?
Well, my first hope is because I've been lax in decades ago, I said I want to visit all the countries all the countries that my country tells me are my enemies before we destroy them. And I missed in Iraq, and now I've missed in Iran, I missed in Venezuela. I didn't get there in time. Cuba's the last one they haven't actually destroyed physically yet. So my first hope is that they don't destroy it before I get there. And luckily, the war in Iran is going so poorly that they probably won't. But once we're there, I mean, it's a short trip, and I'm just there to both let the Cuban people know that there are lots of Americans who are behind them, and then secondly, come back with information that I can share to get to other people to work on removing this ridiculous blockade
And then, do you also hope to be part of another flotilla to Gaza? And is that something you can talk about?
Well, I interviewed this morning for that for a position on the global Samud flotilla, and I'll hear about that hopefully in the next week or two. I hope middle of April to bring the same kind of relief to the people of Gaza. And in view of Gaza being so out of the news, and all my friends in the West Bank getting beaten on, I heard about that again on this webinar just now. It's only going to be people that are going to rescue and. You know, I tried to get on the flotilla 2 years ago when we only had 3 boats. Last year they had 40, and this year they hope to have 100. I mean, if we had 1,000, I think it would make all the difference in the world. But again, if we can grow each year, that means that people, ordinary people, are standing up to their governments, and we can follow take Eisenhower's advice. He said, you know, one of the people love peace so much that one of these days the governments are going to have to get out of the way and let them have it. That's what this is all about.
I hope so. I wish the USS Eisenhower were on board with some of Eisenhower. I wish Eisenhower himself had been on board with some of Eisenhower's. The thing about moving these people with elections, John, I remember how big a movement we had back in 2004, 5, 6, and the top issue in the 2006 elections was ending the war in Iraq, and that we gave the Democratic Party that, you know, both houses end the war in Iraq, and they immediately came in and escalated the war in Iraq, and their, you know, strategists, people like Rahm Emanuel said, well, it's an unpopular war, so we got to keep it going so we can run against it again in 2008. And it's just what I'm seeing in, Senator Schumer has not said one word about anybody killed in Iran, one word who isn't, from the United States and is killed near Iran, one word about the rule of law, about the chaos being created, about the risk up to nuclear being created, but has, put out a nice statement about how unpopular this should make Trump. And so if it makes the guy whose name is at the top of the headline unpopular, and it doesn't make the people who are maneuvering to let him do it unpopular, what, and there's no third choice, of course, what do we do with the with these elections?
Well, I've given up on partisan politics as being a solution for all the reasons you just said. It's just too many times I see the both of the major parties in the U.S. are run by the same people. I understand Trump's rise to Hitler so much better after watching him debate Hillary Clinton again, a clip from 2015, where she's berating him for not paying taxes. He's saying, "Hillary, I don't pay taxes, so I don't have to pay taxes. I'm smart enough to know the code. If you want me to pay taxes, change the code." And he looks at her and says, "You never will because your rich friends are using the same deductions I am. You will never change it." And that's absolutely true. She never did, never tried. It's got to be a people power movement. And if we're lucky, we'll get a candidate that's truly a people candidate and that'll oppose both parties and get the job done. There's really a lot of hope for that. It's so much more important to advocate for what you want than to get your guy in elected. I think that's important, but not nearly as important. Look at Marjorie Taylor Greene. I mean, total reversal. She's one of the biggest proponents of the Palestinian cause now because she realizes the stupidity of it all, and yet she came in 100% supporting it. So, and I saw people make a difference in her here. So it's people power that matters.
With just 1 minute left, John Rohr, people who want to be involved in people power in the most effective ways they can, where should they go? What should they do?
Look for somebody in your congressional district who's acting on these things. If you want any help with that, you can get in touch with some of us at World Beyond War, and I'll put you in touch with, if I don't have the immediate answer, through Code Pink, the Friends Committee on National Legislation, the American Friends Service Committee, A New Policy. There are a lot of people working on just what we're talking about from an electoral point of view. At the absolute minimum, everybody ought to be telling their congressperson what they want.
Good advice, good model. Go out there and be like John. John Rohr is a board member at World Beyond War and will be bringing some badly needed aid to Cuba. John, thank you very, very much for everything you're doing and for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you, David.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.
Talk World Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Patrick Riley, a real estate professional with Century 21 Select, specializing in properties in Chico and Butte Meadows. Patrick is dedicated to helping buyers and sellers achieve their real estate goals with kind, quality service. Patrick can be reached at 530-588-6593 or on Facebook. And by the Chico Chamber of Commerce, leveraging the voice of business for community good. For more information about Chico Chamber opportunities, or how you can move Chico forward, visit Chico